The following live presentation by Rabbi David Aaron is brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To learn more about Israelite, please visit our website at www.israelite.org. Additional contact information is available at the end of this presentation. Thank you for learning with Israelite and enjoy the experience.
Now basically, the last class, if we to define it, we would say the last class is what is creation? Or what is a creative process? And through reading it very carefully, this is the first thing you have to do. You know, you can go this commentary, that commentary, but you don't understand what you're reading if you didn't read the Chumash carefully. When you read the Chumash carefully, the commentaries become helpers to your understanding of the Chumash rather than inhibiting your understanding of Chumash because you read them prematurely before you knew what they were addressing. So we clarified that, in fact, we see that creation, on one hand, seems to be a process of what we would call din, a process of separating, defining, demarcation, multiplicity, distinctions, right? And at every stage of the game, God says, and it was good, and we asked ourselves, well, why? Can we think of some reason why God would have to say, and he looked at it and it was good? We thought that perhaps it would be reasonable to assume, because maybe there's some assumption here that it would be bad, in fact, because it's din, because it is this process of breaking things into apparent pieces, we would think that there's something wrong, because the force of evil is from the force of breaking things into pieces. In fact, the word ra is connected to a Hebrew word which actually means to break into pieces. Ra'ah, spelled with two ayin, actually means to break something into pieces. And ra is evil. So on one hand, we trace this process of creation and the creative process as a process of diversification and particularism, breaking up into more and more details. And yet, if we looked at it very carefully, although everything seems to be going towards a greater state of uniqueness, every new individual creation actually included everything from before it. Then in fact, of course, the vegetation includes the minerals. And of course, the animals include, to a certain extent, the vegetation. And ultimately, the most all-inclusive creature, who is actually the most unique, is the human being. That includes Nase Adam Betzalmenu. Let us make man in our image. And God, according to that pshat, is referring to all of creation. Okay? And in fact, although it seems to be going in the direction of particularism, it also seems to be going in a different direction, which is things going to greater states of whole. Okay? And this is what's called in Kabbalah, or Yashar, or Chozer. There's this light, this unfolding light, and yet there's this returning light. It seems to be unfolding and unraveling to something very detailed, and yet with every step down, it seems to be actually going a step forward towards, again, the greatest vision expression of the most universal reality, God. God being the most perfect, the most whole, God including within the divine realm the possibility for everything. Okay? So yesterday was, what is creation? What is a creative process? And we said that really a creative process is the unification of two opposing forces. A force that creates details, and yet another force that seems to unify all those details into a comprehensive whole. Okay? And that's what creativity would be. And we define what would make something unique. What's really unique, what really belongs to a completely different category, is that which includes everything else. That's really most unique. And that's why we refer to God as unique. Because the divine realm includes everything. God is, so to speak, understood as the place of the world. All within that divine realm. Okay. Now today what we're going to address is, what is man? And I mean, what better way to learn Jewish philosophy than to really pick up the source of it all? Because really, every one of these statements, every one of these portions, and this is what I want you to do, is determine, what does this chapter teach me? Of course, the next chapter would obviously be, what is sin? Right? What is tshuva? It's all here. And that's what I meant when you break it down, you learn Torah in a conceptual way, you want to understand, what is it that's providing us over here? What is it defining for us here? So today, we want to know, what is a human being? And so we go to verse 26. Let's read it very carefully. V'yomer Elohim naaseh Adam v'tzelmeinu. Let us make man in our image. Kidmuteinu. As our likeness. V'yirdu b'dgat hayam, and they will rule over the fish of the sea, v'af ha-shamayim, the bird of the skies, u'v'behema, and the animals of b'chol ha-aretz, and all the land of b'chol ha-remes ha-romes ala aretz, and every creepy crawly thing on the land. V'yivra Elohim et Adam b'tzelmo, and God created man in his image. B'tzelem Elohim bara oto, in the image of God he created him. Zachar u'nekeva bara otam, male and female he created them. Vivarech otam Elohim, and God blessed them. V'yomer lehem Elohim, and God said to them, Pru urvu, be fruitful and multiply. U'milu ha'aret v'kafshuha, and fill the earth and capture it. Urdu bidgat hayam, and rule over the fish, birds, and all the animals. Verse 29, V'yomer Elohim, and God said, Yinei netati lechem, behold, I have given to you all the grass and everything else and all the trees. Okay, that's all I want to read. Let's go back. Now we want to rip this apart so that we can get really down to what's really happening over here. So the first question we have to ask is what, when we read this first verse? What's the first question we need to ask in order to come to some kind of clarity? What is this plural form? But before we understand the let us, what if it would have simply said let me? What would then your question be? Well, the truth is that's a problem in English. Because in English it says let me, which implies allow me to. And Rashi goes for that implication. It's implied, but really, shot-wise, in terms of Hebrew, it just says naseh, I will make. That's what it literally means, naseh, I will make. If it would have said aseh, Adam, b'tzelmi. Let's just, before we deal with the problem of why is it plural, there's something even before that. Because if it wasn't plural, would you still be satisfied, or is there still a question that needs to be asked?
Well, the other things he just said, he just went and did it.
Exactly. Why is this different than any other day of creation or creature? Right? That's it. That's a shot question, because every other creation is, let there be light, let there be this, let there be that. And only here, by the human being, do we have, I will make man. And God made man. Okay? And God made man. What else differs about this mode of creation than any other creation? This has a preparatory statement. I will make man. I'm about to do this. Okay? And what else is unique about this statement, about this creation? Well, the image, but besides that, just in terms of the way it happens, without dealing with what's being created, even if it was fish over here, or even if it was grass over here, forget about the object of creation. We're first going to look at the statement very carefully in terms of the presentation of this particular type of creation. The first thing we notice is it has a preparatory statement. The second thing we're about to notice is what? Naseh Adam, will make man. Man could also be a species at that point. Although the truth is that, the interesting thing is that the humankind was made as an individual rather than a species. Everything else was a species. Right, what else is interesting about this? Yeah. There's much more definition in terms of his future, in terms of his rule, in terms of his role, I'm sorry, in terms of his essence. That's true also. What else do we notice about this? Yeah.
It's the same with us. It's implying that there's a decision that could be a joint decision.
Well, forget about the us. We're just simply looking. We're breaking it down to pieces. The only way you could analyze something. You break it into its first pieces. First, we see that, obviously, the first thing that hits us is it's in plural sense. But forget about that. Ask yourself, and what if it wasn't in the plural sense? Would it still be fine? Is it just like like everything else? No, it's clearly not like anything else because it's a preparatory statement which we've never had before. And second of all, in the creation of man, God never said, let there be man. Do you see this? Right? There is no statement. Why did God say, if we had the preparatory statement, which is, Naseh Adam, I'm going to make man. Right? So then, fine. And then the next statement we would have assumed to hear was, V'yomer Hashem, let there be man. And there was man. Right? But that's not what happens over here. And therefore, this is a pshat question because it completely strays from the pattern of the early creation story. In other words, with all these questions, right, we can already begin to understand what's different about the human creation than any other creation. What is different at this point? What is different about God, so to speak, in creating man than in creating anything else? Well, forget about the content. We're simply seeing the presentation. You have to be able to distinguish between the presentation and then what's being presented. We're first looking at how it's presented. No matter what was being presented, doesn't matter. How this was being presented already tells us about something about what's going to be presented. Presentation. Try and blank out all the details of image and we and all that. Just see the presentation. The presentation is very clear. Unlike everywhere else where God said, let there be, God said, let's say, I will make. Right? I will make. Unlike where God said, let there be this and it was. Here God is saying, I will make, or of course the details are, we will make, but let's say it was, I will make, right? And then, and God created. What's different? What's the difference? I will make and let there be light. I mean, there's no doubt that we see that there's something about this new creation, which happens to be man, that is most, it's presented in the most purposeful way, unlike anything else, which would imply what about it and its relation to everything else? That this is the ultimate expression of the purposefulness of everything else. Right? That this is the expression of the ultimate purpose, everything else, and now here's man that will rule over this and direct all this. Right? Meaning that everything until now has almost been waiting for this, which is going to direct them in their path and therefore fulfill them. Okay? But there's a sense, and someone said it already, which is a sense of personal. Right? Personal. Involvement. Yes, there's a notion of decision over here. What does that mean that God is making a decision? What, God didn't make a decision before? But the fact that the Chumash is telling us this is telling us that there's somehow a greater, more direct involvement of God in this creation than any other creation. Do you follow that? Just from the words, just reading it carefully, that would be a reasonable pshat. Yeah. Excellent. Do you see this? Just reading it very carefully, you start to really taste its sweetness in terms of what it's really telling us over here. And we can discover who the humankind is by understanding how the humankind was brought into existence. So the first thing we notice is that mankind is presented with a preparatory statement, which implies a greater involvement or a more direct involvement of God. And of course, God created everything. Right? Let there be this and let there be that. But over here, it implies over here a greater involvement of God. And that would then imply that the human being is of some greater importance. And that ultimately, this human being must be like the goal of everything. Right? Okay, let us make man. Okay, we've done it. Let there be this, let there be that. Now let us make man. There is definitely an indication over here that the human being is the apex of creation, which is important to know. Not that the human being is simply the last on the totem pole. We wasn't thinking that. But on the assembly line. It really comes to my mind. But okay, if you'd like to use that. But not on the last, okay, we did this, and this, oh, man. But there's something about all this that has really been building up towards, let us make man. Right? Let us make man. Okay, now the next thing, of course, we have to ask. We first looked at its basic presentation. We noticed that God is directly creating rather than just simply a statement. Of course, God is saying something, let us. There is an introductory statement, and God created man, unlike any other place, and there was light, and there was this. There's that sense of direct relatedness to it. Very important. Okay. Now, the other thing, of course, we have to deal with is na'aseh. We're very disturbed. We understand there's a preparatory statement which implies importance, which implies more direction and more involvement, more personalness, but now we're a little disturbed by the pluralism over here. Let us make man. So who is the us? Right? Who is let us make man? Now there's a number of choices that we could go for, which I would say in the Torah world, they're all correct, they're all pshat, and they're all what Torah is all about. What is the first idea? Let us. What would be the simplest way of understanding this? What? True. What would be more simple is I see God speaking in the plural sense, and I'm bothered.
The royal we.
Ah, the royal we. But how do we get to that? How did we get to that? Whereas I see God speaking in the plural sense, and I'm disturbed because God should be speaking in the singular sense. The first approach would be, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe this is, in fact, still God speaking in the singular sense, and this is in no way referring to anybody else, and I should think about that. That's how you should deal with it, methodologically. Whereas look at what's bothering you, and think maybe what's bothering me isn't really a problem at all. Before I give a solution, maybe it's not a problem at all. Maybe I'm making the assumption that God's speaking to anybody else. Maybe it seems like it's in the plural. Maybe it's not in the plural, and we have a wonderful pshat. The pshat is the royal we. Right? The royal we. That God is speaking as a royal we. Okay? That sense of why does the king speak? Why is, you know, when a king gets on the round, he says, we would like, right, this decree to happen. Right? Why does the royal speak in a manner of we? Why? They represent the totality of the kingdom. And when they say, we decree this, what are they basically saying? My decisions are not derived from myself as an individual, but myself as the microcosm of all of you. And therefore, it is really in your interest. Right? It's really in your interest. Now, that is a valid shot. Our question, of course, is, okay, so God spoke in the royal we. Why didn't God speak in the royal we anywhere before this? Well, the truth is, never before this has God ever said, let me make man. Right? In the first place. And only until now, God said, let there be light, let there be this. Okay? So it's only at this point that God is making this kind of statement. But more than that, it's again telling us something about the humankind. Right? What's about to be created, without even knowing what it is, by the way it's been introduced, we already know something about it. What do we know about man? If he is presented through the royal we, what is it about?
Process? Is he
part of the we? God as a we. It sounds really weird. God is a we. Right? God as a we is creating man. And who? God as a king representing the we. Who's the we? The people? There are no people. So that would be a slight problem. Right? All of creation. Right? All of creation. God speaking as a king of all of creation says we, because what I'm about to create is in the interest of everybody here. Right? Of significance to everything else that has already been created. Do you see this? That tells us again something about man. That all of creation finds its fulfillment and its meaning through this creature called man. All this is just clearly reading the psukim. This is already telling us what Jews believe about the humankind. The humankind is a creation which was of more direct relationship of God. We'll have to understand what that means. And the human being is of great significance to everything that came before that. Right? Everything comes to its fulfillment through this human being. God creates man. And man is in the best interests of all of creation before him. Which would then make sense. And he will rule over the world, giving it direction, giving it guidance, giving it order. Right? And without man, the world will just crumble if man behaves like a man in the image of God. Right? So already we're reading simply the psukim in one shot. Is that when God said, let us make man, or we will make man, forget about the let us, that's, we will make man, that is really God as a singular speaking in the kingly royal we, suggesting that what's about to be created is of great interest and importance and significance and of meaning to everything else that is prior to all the other subjects of the kingdom that already exist. We believe that everything in the world, even if man's never even seen it, exists only because it's a human being. Right? And that your actions are either fulfilling or destroying parts of the earth, or the universe for that matter, without even knowing it. Right? And we'll talk about that when we get to the third chapter, so just hold it. The next we is who? And these are not exclusive shots, they're all the shot. This is the idea of Torah, that you take the Torah and you hit it with a hammer, and just as, you know, something breaks into little pieces and sparks come out of it, so too when you take your head like a hammer and bang it against the book just blossoms into various understandings that actually enhance each other, right? And that's what it means to study Torah. So what's the other we? So the Midrash, and Rashi brings down this Midrash, that God consulted the angels. And this is where the English translation comes up with the let us make man, that implies naaseh adam, implies a kind of asking for their permission. What do you think? Let's make man. We'll make man. Right? Come on. Now, what is that supposed to mean? Normal person, what am I supposed to think about that? You know, I mean, I know what I'll tell my kids, but in terms of, you know, what am I going to say to myself? In terms of, like, yes, you understand. God until now had full reign. Right? Angels had no problems with the angels in terms of asking their advice on light. Angels will be really into light. And, you know, about grass. Yeah. But with man, God asks the angels. So Rashi explains, right, he doesn't really explain, he brings in the Midrash. This is God's humbleness. Right? We learn God's humbleness from here. Because man is in the image of the angels, they would be jealous of him. And therefore God asked their advice. Now obviously what's bothering Rashi is, what's the naseh? Right? What is the we referring to? And why doesn't Rashi just take one of the other pshats that we have, like God asked all the creatures? Because Rashi looks at Midrash and just simply takes the Midrash that makes the most sense out of the pasuk. He doesn't come up with his own pshat. It's very interesting to know this about Rashi. That his way of doing things, he doesn't simply explain it according to the way he feels, or the way it makes sense to him. That wasn't his job. He was simply interested in taking from various places Midrashim that he thought were most appropriate to make the simpler sense out of it. And then really they're angels and God's asking angels, and I'm feeling in the background that angels are going to be nervous. Oh no, there's going to be a man who looks just like us.
That they're going to be made in the image of angels or God?
The Midrash says that since they're going to be in the image of the angels, but of course angels are also called Elohim. Angels are also called Elohim, forces, divine forces. And God is Eloheha Elohim, the God of forces, of divine forces. Okay. So there's this jealousy. Now, what is that supposed to mean? I mean, what am I supposed to do with that? Why would angels be jealous? And let me ask you a question. And if the angel said no, right? God would say, okay, yeah, it was just an idea. Right, what would that mean? Right, what would that mean? And if the angels would have said, no, we're not interested. Does God need to ask the angels? No. So why does God ask the angels? Rashi says why. Why did God ask the angels? Not because he needs them. Oh, is that what he said over here? Let's look at it very carefully, his words. We learn God's humbleness here. We learn God's humbleness here. That God asks the angels in order to introduce the creation of man with what? With humbleness. Isn't that interesting? What does that tell us about the creation of man? What did it take for the divine to create a human being? which will then give us some understanding of what must that human being be. It takes humbleness on behalf of God. God must create the human being, but through the need of humbleness. But this is telling us that in order to create man, God says he puts himself into a mode of humbleness. Right? Into a mode of humbleness. And that tells us something about the kind of creature that God is going to create. The angels are jealous. These divine forces might feel intimidated about man. And by God asking the angels what do they think, this demonstrates to the angel that God is not intimidated by man. Which would imply there might be reason for God to be intimidated. I'm telling you, I'm not intimidated. You shouldn't be intimidated. Let's make man. That's very interesting. Because you will read later on that the snake says, you know, God doesn't want you to eat from the tree because he's frightened of you. Right? He doesn't want any competition. And this tells us something about what it means to make a man. Right? Number one, we learned that in the royal we, mankind is of interest of all creation, of important significance to all creation. And we now learn that man is of great significance in that to create man, that takes humbleness on the part of the divine. Okay? And why does God need to put himself into a state of humbleness by asking the angels so that he can then create man? This is the ultimate expression of God's greatness. That he could create a being like himself. That takes humbleness. That takes great humbleness. The greatest humbleness of a parent is to create their children in their own image, which means that their children can make their own choices and also become a parent. And that their children can also be able to stand on their own two feet and be independent, make their own decisions. Right. So we're now seeing a little bit more about man just by reading the pasuk carefully. Yeah?
I don't understand.
What does it mean to be humble? Humbleness means you make yourself small, to give place and space to others. And this, in fact, is suggesting already in a midrashic way what's called the tzimtzum in Kabbalah, that God constricted his light, made a hole for there to emerge a human being. Okay. The other pshat is that God is not asking the angels, and this is really a mode of God, that the preparatory mode to create a man is God going into a state of humbleness by asking the angels. Right? But the next pshat is God is asking, and God is not asking, but God is inviting the rest of creation. Let us make man. And this tells us what about man? What is man? Not only is man significant to all creation, not only is man apparently possibly intimidating to the divine forces, and it takes humbleness to be able to create such a powerful, divine-like creature, but what also is man? But in terms of Naseh, we said the other day that God is referring to all of creation, and all of creation contributes to man, and that means man is a microcosm of all of reality. That really, what is man? Not another particular creature. There was this creature, that creature, this creature, that creature, and here's the last creature on the assembly line. But man is actually all-encompassing creature. Man is actually the whole which is greater than the sum of the parts, and this is his unique identity. That he is greater than the sum of the parts and incorporates the sum of the parts. And this, by the way, is found also in Avot to Rabbi Natan. You know, there's Perkei Avot, chapters of fathers. There's other Avot that are similar, and one of them is called of Rabbi Natan. And over here it says, God created the entire world, heaven and earth, upper realms and lower realms, and all that he created in his world, he fashioned in man. Right. Clearly telling us that man incorporates everything of the universe within himself. Right? Everything of the universe within himself. And the Zohar says, when God created man, he set in him all the images of the supernal mysteries of the world above and all the terrestrial mysteries of the world below, and therefore all are articulated in man. For he exists in the image of God. That itself is very, very important to understand. That man, incorporated in man, reflected in man, is the totality of the universe. Not only the physical universe, but the spiritual universe. all incorporated in the human being. And the Zohar is saying, and that all articulated man for existing in the image of God, tells us something about what the image of God is. That if man is that whole that incorporates all the various parts and yet remains the whole, then this is an image of God. How can we understand God? God is that whole reality, that original whole reality, greater than the sum of any parts, prior to any parts, all the parts and details we see in the world, is the unfolding of that which exists in possibility within the divine realm. Yeah?
By making somebody in your image, right? Or a parent trying to make their child in their image, and that's humbleness.
It takes great humbleness for a parent to let their child say, no, I don't want to do what you asked me to do. And realize that they have to let the kid make their own decision sometimes.
But that's making somebody in your own image?
Yeah. Because what is your image? Your image is independence. And to create them in your image, you're going to have to let them have independence. And in order to give them independence, you've got to make yourself small and be humble to let them do that. You see that? To be a parent, a real parent, takes humbleness. You have to humble yourself in the face of your child to say, okay, do what you want. Sometimes, not always. The greatest manifestation of divine strength is his self-constraint, which is his humbleness in order to let mankind make decisions and run the world. This is an act of strength. It's not weakness at all. It's very good. So now what does this mean, though, that mankind is this microcosm of the world? Right? The microcosm of the world. What we believe from a mystical note, that just as when an architect is building a building, first he makes his model. And every move he makes on this little model actually has far-reaching significance and will be translated into the larger picture of that building, so to the human being. So to the human being, that microcosm, what will happen in your life, will be translated and superimposed upon the greater picture of life. And that's an amazing idea. That's one of the ideas from the mystical point of view, that when a person does a mitzvah, what they're doing is they're actually transforming the world by transforming themselves, which is a microcosm of the world. That transformation is then translated into far-reaching effects in the entire cosmos. Right? And those are the mystical ideas. When you do a mitzvah, you draw light into the world, you do tikkunim and all this type of thing. That all sounds really strange, but in a certain extent, since all is incorporated within man, that what will happen to man will in fact affect everything else, because everything is coming together in man. That ultimately man is the culmination of all of creation. That mankind is almost like, for instance, the last center rock in a dome. You know, when they're building the dome, right, and they put that last rock, or when they're building an arch and they build it up and then they put that last center rock, I don't know what they would call it, the keystone. What is that keystone all about? What does it do? It actually holds all things together. It's interesting. It seems like just another rock, right, amongst all the other rocks, but it's not. It's really the foundation rock. It's the foundation. Generally, we think the foundation is over here. But it's a different kind of foundation. All the energies culminate in this rock, right? All the energies of the structure culminate in this rock, and this rock actually holds the whole thing together. Right? Do you see this? To a certain extent, that rock is like the context and the foundation, the ground of all the others, and yet it's over here. Right? It's kind of hard to see that. That's what a human being is. That's what a human being is. The Yesod. Yesod is the keystone, you know. We say that Tzadik Yesod HaOlam. That the Tzadik is the Yesod of the world, the foundation. But when generally people think of foundation, they think of this, you know, and you put it on the family. How's the Tzadik? Tzadik is just a particular thing in creation. So how is it the foundation of creation? The foundation would be over here, or underneath the foundation. But the human being, who ultimately is supposed to be Tzadik, of course, is the Yesod. Right? Is the Yesod. Which, by the way, in terms of creation, this 6-day correlates to the spherical Yesod. Because the human being is the yisod, the keystone. That all the energies of the structure of creation is actually coming like this, and it's actually culminates, right, and becomes completed within man, and is held together by man. And what will happen to that keystone will have far-reaching effects to everything. If that keystone crumbles, the entire thing will crumble. Do you see this? Yeah. So that's how we have to conceptualize ourselves as human beings. That although we seem like particular creatures amongst all the other particular creatures, we're not. Just as that keystone is not another particular rock, it's actually the collective of all the rocks that all the rocks' energy culminate within and are held together by. And what happened to that rock will have far-reaching ramifications to everything in the world. That's how we have to understand humankind. So when God said, let us make man, on one hand we see a particular man amongst all the other particularities, so how is that man a universal creature? How is that man actually not a particular but a collective when he looks like a particular? So I suggest the metaphor of this keystone, right, which actually Kabbalistically would even make sense when the Kabbalah talks about Sfirat Yisod, as everything culminating in it, yet it seems to be a particular, still seems to be just another one of those Sfirot. Another one of those attributes. So what we see over here is this is the Tzelem Elohim. This is the image of God. That just as God, so to speak, is the Makom HaOlam, God is that ground, that context wherein everything culminates and is held together by, giving place in space, so to the human being is a reflection of that because he too performs that function. Okay. Any questions on that? Yeah.
How come...
All we were dealing with, by the way, is what Naseh means. Now we'll deal with Telem, okay? We first looked at it as a statement. What's different about this statement without looking at the details? We saw that it is a preparatory statement unlike any other creation. Then we went into the details and we said, it said Naseh. Right? Different in that there's a pluralism going on over here. And what is that referring to? And we offer the various pshats and the significance of those pshats philosophically. Now we want to know what it means, bitzelim. Okay? Bitzelim. So let's look at it. V'yomer Hashem, God said, Naseh Adam bitzelmeinu, let's make man in our image, kidmuteinu, like our likeness. Now obviously, we're going to have to figure out what's the difference between Tselem, our image, and Muteinu, our likeness. And let me tell you what Rashi says. Bitzelmeinu. Bitfus shelanu. In our tfus. Do you know what a tfus is? A printing press. But what is a printing press? A certain press. What's a press? It's a what? What is that press? I mean, in the old days, what was a printing press? What was it?
Just a roller. It was just a roller.
What? The press, it imprints, it's a mold. A tefus is a mold. Right? That's what it means in Hebrew in its root form. A tefus is a mold.
Okay? What did you say the word tefus?
Rashi says, what is Tselmeinu? He says, in our mold. Now what does that mean? Why is Rashi saying that? In our mold. In our mold. And Rashi says, Kidmuteinu, like our likeness, to understand and to comprehend. Lahavin v'lahaskil. Okay? Rashi is saying when God said we'll create man in our image, that means in our mold, shelanu, in our mold, defush shelanu, and in our likeness means to understand and to comprehend. Lahavin lahaskil. What is Rashi bothered by? Why? What is he telling us here? What is he helping us understand? First of all, what's the difference between image and likeness? So Rashi is going to give you some kind of distinction. Image means in our mold, and likeness means to understand and to comprehend. Let's first deal with likeness because it's easier. What is Rashi saying? What is Rashi saying that man is in our likeness? What does that mean? In our likeness? How is man in God's likeness?
The ability to create.
The ability to create? Does it say to create? La'avin v'la'askil, to understand, to comprehend. How is man in God's likeness? The ability to understand and comprehend. And what is Rashi doing with this? Well, so what, you know, what does that mean? What did you think in our likeness means? I mean, literally, what do you think it means in our likeness? Visually, that we look like God. That's what this seems to be saying. Shot-wise, in simple sense, God created man in his image, and we look at, and anybody can read this, oh, we look like God. God looks like us. Of course, that's ridiculous. Right? And so Rashi clarifies, what does it mean that you're in our image? What does it mean? Likeness in terms of abilities. Right? Likeness in terms of abilities. Okay? That how is man like God? That he has understanding and he has seichel. By the way, what's the difference between lahavin v'laskil? To understand and to comprehend. Lahavin is analytical. It breaks things into pieces. What? It also does that, but it, no, I mean, in terms of the connection between the words, are you asking?
Yeah.
No, there's no connection word-wise. But lahavin means to analyze, to break things into their particularities. Lahaskil would then mean what? To bring it together. Right? Lahaskil comes from the word shekol. Right? Sechel has what word in it? Kol, which means what? All, whole. I would say probably kol and whole probably has some kind of relationship in terms of English. But lahavin is to break things into pieces, to analyze things, and laskil means to then bring them into a comprehensive way. Right? That's the difference between understanding something and then comprehending it, which is it becomes comprehensive. Right? Whole. So this is what man is like God. Just like God, and where do we see God has havana and haskala? We saw creation. We see creation on one hand, the ability to analyze and put things into particularities, and yet still maintain a wholeness. Okay? And that's how man will be like God, the God that we've met in the Chumash. Yeah?
Why didn't you just say, no, that Hashem made his likeness? Why did they put an image
of God? Oh, no. Well, first let's deal with image. All right, we just wanted to understand how Rashi understood kidmuto.
We would have thought image means a visual thing.
And we would also have thought likeness is a visual thing. We could have handled it, and Rashi did. That's all I wanted to point out. That Rashi is clarifying that when man is made in God's likeness, he's like God, not visually, but in terms of his abilities. Now let's go backwards. The reason why I did that is because that's the easier one. When God said, Bitfush Shalanu, right? Then Rashi's still bothered by the same problem. What is God's image? I mean, we set our likeness that we can get away with. You can get away with saying, like God, in terms of, you know, Havana and Haskala. But you can't get away. Tzela means image. So what did Rashi do? Bitfus Shalanu. What does that mean? With our mold. It's not referring to our image. It's referring to our mold, the mold that we created. That man was prepared from a mold. That's what Rashi's saying. Right? That, you never knew that, right? You never knew that that's how one of the ways of understanding this. That God didn't create from this pasuk, God did not create man in his image, but God created man with his image. And what was that image? A mold that he formed. Right? And that's not going to be too helpful, because later on Rashi will say, what kind of mold was it? God's image, right? But just for this point, we'll get to the next verse in a second. So that's how you read this pasuk. In other words, you have to read it with, instead of saying, and God said, let us make man in our image, bitzelmenu is not to be read as in our image, but with our image. Bit can also mean with our image. Okay? With our image. And then kidmutenu, as our likeness, right? Not bit, not with our dmut, or in our dmut, but kid, like our dmut. You see it if you read it very carefully, because it could have said bitzelmenu, bit dmutenu, but it didn't. in our image or in our likeness. It says with our image and with our likeness.
We still don't know quite what image is.
So let's go on. So that's how Rashi deals with this. He says that image is a tfus. God prepared an image, right? God prepared an image. Now, I want to read to you a little bit more about that. Verse 27, Yivra Elohim et Adam v'tzelem, and God created man in his image. V'tzelem Elohim bara oto, in the image of God he created him. Male and female he created them. What's wrong with the pasuk? What's disturbing about the verse? Okay, singular plural. Did God create him or did God create them? Right. First it says, and God created man in his image. In the image of God, he created him. Well, what's going on over here? So of course, by reading the pasuk very carefully, you can now go and look at some commentaries to figure out what they suggest to do with this pasuk. Okay? Now let's look at what Rashi says. Yira Elohim et Adam b'tzelmo. And God created man in his image. Bitfus ha'sui lo, with the mold that he made for him. That all that God created, all was created through statement, but man was created through hands. Right? Rashi says this, and this is from Midrash. Everything else was created by God's statement, but man was created by God's hands. God made a mold, right? And made man through this mold. And Rashi brings the Tehillim. This is Psalms 139, where it says, "You laid thy hand upon me." That God made us with his hands, so to speak. That, what does it mean with our mold, the mold that we prepared, or with my mold, the mold that I prepared with my hands, Rashi is suggesting over here. The man was not simply God said, let there be man, but man was created, right, through, so to speak, God's hands. What does that mean? That's all very nice, right? And Rashi is getting away from having to say that man's created in God's image, but man's created with God's image, the image that God prepared with his hands. What does that mean? What does that mean about man? Unlike anybody else or any other creature. No, that's another statement. But if it says over here, and God created man not in his image, but with the image that he prepared with his own hands, what does that mean about man?
Once again, they're getting personal love, and the others he just spoke, but here he's like getting into
it. Excellent. Again, we see over here the creation, man. In order to create man, God has to be personally involved. Unlike everything else, God is not personally involved. Here, God is personally involved. And so what does Rashi say? Rashi's pshat is, and God created man with his image, the image that he created, the mold that he created in order for man. So God created man through his image. And what is B'Tselem Elohim bara oto? And in the image of God, he created him. Rashi says, and what was that mold that God created with his personal touch and hands? What was that mold? That mold was the image of God. And so once Rashi said that, we come back to our original problem. What image of God? How can God have an image? Right? But now there's no way of getting out of it. The first pasuk, God created man. Let's create man in our image with our tfus, with the mold that we'll create with our hands personally. And he'll be like us that he'll have intellect. Right? And so once God set that preparation, we're going to make man in such a manner. This is our goals. This is where we're going. This is our direction. This is our plan, our strategy of action. Now, God created man within his image, or with his image, Rashi's saying, with the mold that he prepared with his own hands. Right? In the image of God created man. What was that mold? That mold was the image of God. Right? That mold was the image of God. So man is created in the image of God through a mold that God created. But what is the image of God? So the Sifte Chachamim, who is a commentary on Rashi, jumps in and explains, of course, nobody's suggesting that God has an image. or a form. But the image of God that man would perceive prophetically. Right? Just as it says in God, and the Jewish people saw God like a warrior at the splitting of the sea, and the Jewish people saw God as an old man at the giving of Torah to Sinai, that the image that God is so perceived by is man. In the image that God reveals himself as to man, God created man. Do you hear this? Not that God has an image, but God chooses an image through which he will reveal himself to man. Right? Takes on a certain costume, a levush, they call it, a certain garment. Certainly, you know, a person might wear the clothing of a judge and the clothing of a golfer and the clothing of a cook. But are they a golfer? Are they a cook? Are they this? They're none of these things, right? But they choose this particular mode in order to relate to people so people can understand them and comprehend them, okay? So therefore, the human being was created in the image of God. What image of God? The image that God uses to reveal himself to man, okay? And that's how Rashi understands this. Right? That's how Rashi understands this. But whatever way we go with Rashi, we end up seeing that Rashi's definitely telling us that the human being was created with a certain personal touch. Unlike any other creature, in order to create man, God has a personal involvement. Right? A personal involvement. Now, I would like to suggest another type of shot, how we could read this, with the aid and the inspiration of a lot of the ideas that Rashi is playing with over here. That really, what does it mean that God created man in his image? Right? In his image. In his likeness. That God created man as, through the persona that he chose to relate to man in the future. Just like Tziftei Chachamim said, that what's the image of God? It is the image that God reveals himself to man as, in order for man to relate to. What is an image anyways? What is an image? Like, certain people are image makers. What is an image? Not really a reflection. When a person makes you into an image, like the image makers. An image is relational, right? Without someone to relate to it, there's no such thing as image.
This presentation by Rabbi David Aaron has been brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To access additional presentations from our online media library, order our best-selling books, or learn more about Israelite programming, including seminars, web-based learning, teleconferences, spiritual retreats, Shabbaton experiences, Israel missions, and leadership training, please visit us at www.israelite.org. That's www.israelight.org. You can also call us in New York at 212-947-4990, or in Jerusalem at country code 972-2-627-4890. We hope you enjoyed this presentation, and we look forward to learning with you at Israelite.